So I actually this is indeed showing some lattice data and asking lattice for some answers. And the lattice data which I will show mostly due to group of Polikarpov from ITEP Moscow. And usually we start with motivation. Motivation could be now given such motivation that if we believe into existence of dual description of QCD, say Young-Mills theory, then it's very natural to look for excitations. You know, it's quite common that excitations of original theory become fundamental variables of dual theory, at least in many cases. But in fact, it would be a distortion of historical process because nobody was looking in this way. I just have what attracts me to this point, to this topic, is that actually it happens that vacuum confining fields are very different from what usually thought about them. They are not soft lambda QCD, but they have ultraviolet non-trivial story. They are having ultraviolet divergent action, as I will try to argue. So that's my main interest to this non-triviality of vacuum fields. And let me start very slowly with fixing language because it's very simple, but nevertheless to avoid losing people just at first page. Lattice field theory is nothing else but just standard field theory. I mean, it's no other in a way. The only thing which is important, of course, to remember that it's Euclidean space-time. Then there is ultraviolet cutoff, which is provided by lattice spacing A, explicit cutoff. And lambda QCD emerges as usual in QCD, infrared scale. And what may be specific for QCD, for the lattice, which is not so much emphasized, that actually on the lattice, ultraviolet divergence become in a way physical because you have specific explicit ultraviolet cutoff. You can calculate divergences. This is, so to say, cosmological constant. For example, alpha vacuum expectation value of G mean nu squared, field strength tensor squared. Then it's like for 0 point fluctuations, vacuum energy is divergent as fourth power of ultraviolet cutoff. But all numbers here are known, and not only this is number of degrees of freedom in front of unit coefficient. And then there is also perturbative series. Actually, this is physical applications were started by Pina Marchesini. He is here. It might be, for you, it might be interesting to learn that this is now best studied and checked prediction of QCD. The accuracy here is about 10 to minus 3 between perturbation theory and measurable. This is Plaquette action measurable, and this is calculable in QCD. So this is best studied prediction of QCD. Theoretical. Then I will use the words percolation, again, very trivial transparency, just not to fix something. Percolation is simplest pictures, and actually simplest and the final in a way. You introduce probability P for a link to be open, means to belong to trajectory. You have lattice, and you announce that there is probability for a link to be open, and then build up trajectories or clusters from these open links. And then you look for a cluster, the probability to have a cluster of links L. And then the probability is clearly this just connected, just one after another cluster. So probability is number of links, P to power number of links, L divided by A, multiplied by entropy, number of different trajectories of the same length L. And number of trajectories is exponentially large because at each point when you, you can continue, you are on the lattice, you can continue different directions from given point, and the number of directions is 7 on cubic lattice for dimensions. If you don't go back, it's canceling your trajectory. And then there is a critical P when this entropy wins over smallness of this factor, so that at P larger is more or less than 1/7 in some approximation, then this probability blows up and infinite for infinite length. You don't have any suppression of length, and this is phase transition to percolation. Maybe least trivial point is that even if you have probability larger than this critical probability, but close to it, the probability for a given link to belong to percolating cluster tends to zero when peak approaches peak critical from above. There is no catastrophe in terms of this percolating cluster, so it's rare near the phase point, near the point transition. Percolation is equivalent to free field theory. Indeed, let us start with classical action L, length of trajectory times mass parameter, like in classical physics. Then suppression due to action clearly is just P. If we have one step with this action, then E to minus MA is equivalent to our probability on the previous transparency. And then it's well known that if we evaluate a final propagator with this action, then we get standard propagator of a scalar particle, but with mass, propagating mass different from this mass parameter. It's not like in classical physics. Propagating mass is some number, known number, divided by lattice spacing times this difference M of A. We should tune this parameter actually as function of lattice spacing, minus log of 7 from the previous transparency divided by A. So it means that if we would like to observe physical particle, means mass independent on lattice spacing, then it's always fine-tuning. We must tune original mass parameter to some geometrical or entropy factor. We can develop this further theories. For example, one loop is calculated in Polyakov book, for example, and then this is number divided by L cube. For probability to find the loop means just finite cluster. There are infinite clusters and finite clusters, and these finite clusters are in a way loops. And then this spectrum of finite clusters as function of their length is known as 1 over L cube times exponential suppression due to this mass. Well, these trivial remarks are actually enough to understand theory, so to say, of confinement in compact U1. It's a paper of Polyakov 74, and it's only one paragraph in his paper, and so its presentation here is even longer than his original derivation. So we shall discuss confinement, and I will always understand confinement as area law for Wilson loop, average log multiplication value of Wilson loop. And as we know, there is no theory in non-abelian case, at least analytical theory, whatever. However, for subgroups, I will consider mostly SU2, as it was written on first transparency, or SU3 without distinguishing them color. And then it's well understood in case of subgroups of SU2, U1 subgroup, and Z2 cases. For U1 case, compact U1 is called. Lagrangian is just free Lagrangian of electromagnetic field. However, this compactness means that there is no action for Dirac string. This is just exactly what we need to say, distinguish between compact and non-compact U1. Then, because Dirac string is not visible, it doesn't cause any action, the mass of monopole is just given by integral from radial magnetic field squared. And this is 1 over r to the fourth magnetic field squared. And therefore, it diverges in ultraviolet. We must introduce some cutoff, ultraviolet cutoff, and this is 1 over charge squared times A in denominator. And therefore, we see that we have mass of monopole of this form, and substituting in the approximation of self-energy, because it's ultraviolet divergent self-energy, it seems to be enough to take this reasonable approximation. If we use this previous transparency, then we understand that choosing E squared tuned in such a way that this number divided by E squared is equal to log of 7, A is extra actually here, we have this equality of suppression due to the huge action and enhancement due to the same huge entropy. And therefore, at this point, we have infinite cluster, which is exactly the same as monopole infinite cluster of monopoles, which is exactly the same as monopole condensate. And this is actually Higgs mechanism of confinement in this language. Also, in case of Z2 gauge theory, confinement looks simple. Z2 gauge theory is defined as you have links plus minus 1 integrate over all these links, and the plaquette is product of four links which organize this plaquette. And then action is equal to some constant times total area of negative plaquettes. And again, we can easily understand that there is a percolating cluster at some point, because to have percolating cluster, we need the large area. It's suppressed exponentially because of this factor. On the other hand, we have again freedom if we build up total area from small plaquettes, we have freedom to choose direction from a few directions at each step, and therefore it's again exponentially large entropy. Therefore, they equal some at some place. And then calculating Wilson loop, in this case it's easier. We have Wilson loop as product of links along the loop. Then its identity, we can replace it by product of plaquettes covering area, because we add links inside the area twice, so this squared is plus one and its identity. And then assuming that we have independent model, so to say, average for Wilson loop is equal to average of plaquette to power of number of plaquettes, we immediately, of course, get confinement in the sense we understand it, because average value of plaquette is probability of plaquette to be minus one plus minus one minus this probability times plus one. And then if we substitute this here, then we get string tension proportional to this plaquette probability to be minus one divided by a squared. A is lattice spacing. It's important to emphasize, it's coming back to this assumption, if we have infinite cluster and we have finite cluster, and it's very easy to understand that finite clusters actually drop out from here because they cross area twice, and therefore they drop out, and it's only this infinite percolating cluster which actually determines this confinement, and this theta is actually probability to belong to infinite cluster, not just to be negative as I said, but to be negative because of belonging to negative cluster. This cluster is better to visualize on the dual lattice, two plaquettes, the dual and our plaquette intersect at one point, and on the dual lattice, the surfaces are closed. That's why it's more convenient to think in terms of dual lattice. So this is the first part. Confinement is well understood in U1 and U2 cases, which are not our case, of course. In both cases, confining fields configuration are infinite cluster percolating, and the mechanism for exponential suppression of Wilson loop is cancellation of large random numbers, plus minus. It's not from small numbers, but from large numbers. And knowing this rule, you can reject many mechanisms of confining. For example, instanton mechanism is immediately rejected. In both cases, I didn't emphasize it, but once you find this confinement fluctuation, you also identify variables, if you're clever enough, of dual formulation. U1 can be reformulated in monopole, so you find first monopoles as excitations, and then can reformulate your theory in terms of monopoles. Then the next part is, again, a very brief review. A phenomenology of confinement in non-abelian case. There is no theory, as we know, but there is simple phenomenology, and the basic idea behind this phenomenological efforts was to actually it was very pragmatical, I believe, because we understand U1 and Z2 confinement. Let us assume that actually U1 and or Z2 degrees of freedom also important and responsible for confinement in case of non-abelian. That's very naive assumption, maybe. How we should realize this idea? I give you analogy, very simple analogy. We have some production of many particles at high energies, and then we have idea that it's only we know about this rapidity or whatever. We have an idea that it's collinear dynamics which is important, and therefore instead of real momenta which are some mess, we would like to have collinear configuration of momenta, and then we can introduce notion of closest collinear configuration. We have real momenta, and we would like to replace them by closest collinear configuration. We do it in two steps. First, we pick up axes to which projections are maximum, maximize projections by choosing n. This is absolutely rotational symmetry, only absolutely legitimate. And then we replace original momentum by their projections. It's highly non-local procedure, and we lose direct relation to original momentum. But nevertheless, it's useful as far as the dynamics is collinear. The same we are doing now. We would like to pick up 1 degree of freedom of original. We have original configuration of SU2 with SU2 action Monte Carlo, and then we we maximize some A mu 3. We declare 3 to be photon and plus minus charged fields, and we use local gauge invariance, this huge invariance, to maximize norm of third component potential. And then this is closest, when we achieve this, this is closest U1 configuration to our original SU2 configuration. We just next step, it's projection, we jump and put plus minus fields equal to zero. And then we have U1 theory, and we can do the same proceed as if it were U1, and similar to in the case of Z2. And therefore we have projected fields, and in terms of these projected fields define monopoles, or these vortices, which are natural topological excitations for U1 and Z2, but now they are defined on for SU2 fields. By construction, because this monopole trajectory is infinitely thin, because we just defined them as Dirac monopole in projected fields, and these surfaces are also infinitely thin. It does not mean, of course, that at this point that they are physically thin. It just you mark something with these projected fields. You don't, at making projection, you lose actually any sense of what you are doing, and it's very difficult to understand what you are doing. And however, then this is phenomenology. It turns out that these trajectories or surfaces have remarkable properties, namely they do exist percolating clusters in both cases, U1 and Z2, infinite percolating clusters. Moreover, by some techniques, people convince themselves that these percolating clusters are also more or less responsible for the confinement in SU2, in the sense that they produce this linear potential at large distances. It's too long to describe what is being done, but simplest idea is just to imagine that on computer you can destroy something, and you destroy these fluctuations, and then you lose confinement. But if you're interested to know more, then ask me then, maybe after, whatever. And maybe the most remarkable for purpose of this talk property is absence of fractal dimensions, means that if you measure total length of these monopoles, percolating cluster, then it's in physical units. It's lambda QCD cube times total volume of the lattice. Therefore, everything is in Fermi. If volume is in Fermi, then this total length of monopole cluster is in Fermi. And the same is true for vortices, which are Z2 excitations. The total area is in physical units, lambda QCD squared times total volume of the lattice. The same result can be written, this is exactly rewriting. You can say that probability of a link to belong to infinite cluster is lattice spacing times lambda QCD to the third power, and for plaquette to surface second power. And you can easily see that, for example, from equation which I derived, so to say, you can easily derive it yourself for this Wilson loop in Z2. It's exactly what we need, string potential to be of order lambda QCD, if we have this probability for a given plaquette to belong to this cluster. On the other hand, it's, I mean, people somehow get used to it, but it's absolutely beautiful relations. Because you have some explicit dependence on lattice spacing, you know, and it's very observation, it's very strong effect. You change A factor of 2, G squared changes a little bit, but this probability goes down or up by a factor of 8 or 4 here. It's absolutely beautiful observation effect. And in a way, we have here non-perturbative physics, you may say, without logarithmic background, of course. These equations look as if we were very close to phase transition, because these infinite clusters, you remember, they vanish when at the point of phase transition. So, the conclusion to this very long, actually, in reality story, that behind this simple facts which I told you, of course, it's long story of search for confinement color fluctuations, empirical, And therefore, there are some percolating clusters defined rather algorithmically in terms of projection, however, having remarkable SU2 invariant scaling laws. And therefore, from this point on, now I will start more original part, we will assume that so through projection we detect some SU2 invariant objects and we'll try to look for further SU2 invariant properties of these clusters and see how it looks like in SU2 invariant way. So the first thing to study it seems to be is just non-abelian action of monopoles. We have projection, we have trajectories defined some way, we come back and measure this action, and the expectation would be that this monopole action is lambda QC times length, because it's some, you would expect that behind this monopole some bulky non-perturbative fields. The reality, and this was how I encouraged people to measure this action, and that's what I got from this computer. This is picture what this trajectory is schematical, what your original material, so to say, from computer. And then you measure action, and this is action. Look at these triangles. This is average of all. There are different types of monopoles, condensing or finite, and let us concentrate on these triangles. So this is more or less constant if you look this way. But this constant is not in units of lambda QCD, but in lattice units. And this 1 over a to the fourth density action, which I showed you the first transparency, ultraviolet divergence. So my prediction was actually this that this would be a to the fourth when I encouraged make this measurement. And then I got this picture. And nevertheless, and I was supposed to write introduction to this paper, and somehow paper went off after 3 months. I could not write, but somehow my colleagues were more or less happy maybe to continue this line, I don't know. So, however, for a long time I could not even find the name for this observation, forget about what it could be, and then realized, I realized that I do know the name for this phenomenon, and I do know the name for this phenomenon not from QCD, but from the Higgs physics. Indeed, this action is in lattice units, which means that the action ultraviolet divergent. This constant means that the action is ultraviolet divergent. Then, remember, for Higgs particle, we have m squared Higgs alpha times ultraviolet divergent squared minus some constant, which we do not know of what it is. In case of monopoles, things are different. We do know this subtraction constant, it's log of 7, as I explained, and we measure directly radiative mass. This is radiative mass, and we measure now this directly on the lattice radiative mass due to non-abelian fields, non-abelian radiative mass. And then I was lucky, actually, this could be not, this green line here on the plot was this log of 7 absolute value. So you see that they fall on this log of 7. And this is not even fine-tuning. In case of Higgs particles, we involve fine-tuning, like in case of compact U1, but there is no constant to tune. It's self-tuning. So in QCD, there is self-tuning of monopoles in such a way as to be light particles despite of this infinities. So there is a point-like side of monopoles, and just in numbers, at presently available lattices, radiative mass measured directly is 6 GeV for smallest lattice spacing, and monopoles travel some distance and then they intersect, and this free path is scaling, and it's about 2 Fermi, and the factor of, you may say, this is measured fine-tuning, which exists now at present lattices, is about factor of 50. Of course, you can define this fine-tuning different ways. And then there are some other predictions. For example, this simple loop can be translated into the spectrum as function of length, and R squared size as function of length, and these predictions also work perfectly. However, I'm of course, this brought this observation and recognition of Higgs side brought much more serious problem, because Of course, we have this Higgs particle is elementary particle, and if monopoles look as Higgs, it means that I'm introducing elementary particle, which is absolutely forbidden, and not me introducing, but computer introducing, and which is forbidden by our rules, namely because of asymptotic freedom. We know that at short distance we have only gluons, and I would formulate it. No particles are allowed, and coming back to the story of ultraviolet divergence, I would define theorem, I mean, I would formulate theorem without proving it, that all ultraviolet divergences must be calculable in terms of original gluons, whatever they are, logarithmic or power-like or any other. And therefore, we are not allowed to have real particle. And what does it mean, real particle? If we have magnetically charged field, then vacuum expectation value phi squared is quadratically divergent for elementary particle is not allowed. And for QCD, what is allowed, whatever this means, is lambda QCD squared. There is a simple way to derive expression for phi squared in terms of monopole trajectories. It's lattice spacing A times density of monopoles, and density of monopoles is total length equal to density times total volume. And therefore, what is allowed is lambda QCD cube, which we already saw, and only 1 over A correction, which is here actually. I'm a little bit afraid of time. I should speed up. We switch from this infinite cluster, which minor thing in terms of this phi squared, it's very rare infinite cluster, to a small cluster, finite clusters. They give ultraviolet divergence. It's clear that ultraviolet divergence comes from small clusters. Therefore, we have prediction that requirement, whatever, constraint from theory that this should be. For monopoles, it's only possible this. And this works, which means it's again very simple statement. If you have 1 over A here, for elementary monopoles, you would have 1 over A cube. And this cube is 4 dimensions minus 1. This is if you don't have any mass parameter, then you are related only to the space-time dimension. And here it means 1 over A means that geometrically, globally, monopoles live on 2-dimensional subspace, not on the full 4-dimensional space. And this is allowed and required, you may say, by asymptotic freedom. My flash just quality of the data. This is the check. This is infinite cluster, and this is 1 over A behavior of finite clusters. Now that's the end of the story of from the point of view of U1. We have infinite ultraviolet action for monopoles. We have also ultraviolet divergent entropy. We see that they indeed change each time the direction. You can see it directly, and that's. And then we know that finite clusters are dominating at small a, but nevertheless, within accuracy which we have, they occupy a two-dimensional surface, not four-dimensional space. So they live on two-dimensional subspace. This is U1 story. Then we have also Z2 side of the story. In this case, excitations are closed surfaces by definition on the dual lattice. And this time I was clever enough to predict that the action must be, should be, I don't know, expected to be ultraviolet divergent in even more vigorously 1 over A squared. And then I waited for half a year, and then I did see this ultraviolet divergence. These black points are, here we have lattice spacing, we change lattice spacing. This is difference between action on the surface and average over vacuum. So this is action of the surfaces. And this is a constant, black points is constant, but again in lattice units, which means that this action is ultraviolet divergent. So it's perfectly ultraviolet divergent action average. Of course, each time it is average. It's not for any plaquettes fluctuate, but average. So, and then maybe most remarkable, then the same difference is measured on the next plaquettes. There are two different types of next plaquettes, and red and blue. And on next plaquette, this difference is perfect zero, a little bit negative, but within error bars maybe. So this ultraviolet divergent is within one lattice spacing on average. transfer size is one vector spacing. On average, of course, always on average. So, and this is zero nearby. Then now we have two surfaces from U1 side that was also a surface, but in that case I didn't emphasize it. It was not, by definition, at least closed surface. It was some just two-dimensional surface. In case of Z2, by topology, you have a closed surface, and then we have two surfaces, and of course, God forbids to have two different surfaces, and monopoles leave on the same surface as Z2 surfaces. So these Z2 surfaces are populated with this monopole. So finally, we have topological excitation in QCD, Young-Mills, as a surface on which live monopoles. And this picture shows also action of monopoles. So this is average action over the whole surface, two-dimensional closed surface. This is monopoles. Monopoles are systematically higher action, hotter. And this green, if we subtract, subtract monopoles for the rest, is green. So this is sizable difference. Monopoles are hotter than average, than nearby. Yes, and then there is one more remarkable property, which I don't have time to explain how it is. Monopoles in non-abelian monopoles are not at all spherically symmetrical, as we would assume, but they are just like a pencil, and the field looks along the surface. So the monopole field is confined to the surface. They are U1 because one vector means always U1 locally objects, abelian objects, but with field looking along. And this is again some SU2 invariants. So we got two more SU2 invariants for action, as I explained, and also this alignment of fields with surfaces, some SU2 invariant. Therefore, what we see now is and this is total area of the surfaces in physical units. So constant here means that total area is in Fermi as function of vector spacing. So these plaquettes add up to the same physical area each time. And therefore we have what we have. We have now what we observe are closed strings on the dual lattice, just by definition, and I summarize their properties. They have ultraviolet divergent action, 1 over A squared. They have ultraviolet divergent entropy. It's also seen that they are crampy. Then total area is lambda QCD squared. And actually, if this AAC means that it's a string of tension of order lambda QCD squared. If you, in old days, people just tried, for example, to put Nambu-Gotha string on the lattice, then you would do exactly the same. You would introduce action and try to tune it to this entropy, and this will be exactly the same picture as we see now. But Nambu-Gotha is known not to be possible to tune because it goes into some whatever. It's a long story, but here we do have consistently just see with our eyes that there is a consistent string of tension lambda QCD point like thin, size zero. Then strings condense because we see infinite cluster of strings, so it is infinite cluster of strings, not just individual clusters. Then, as I mentioned, there are excitation leavings on the strings, monopoles, so to say, but now it's better to label them just excitations because their field is very different from spherical field of monopoles. And there is also some alignment of fields with geometry. Now, this is actually quite a simple set of data. It's very simple. You have string, elementary string, so to say, which propagates, and there are particles living on the string, and the field of particles is over along the string. This simplicity actually is somewhat deception because we know not everything. I don't tell you how this surface interacts with external charges, for example, quark charges. It is because this so now because I was able to make the, we were able to make this progress only because we concentrate on this self-energy. The simplicity of this description is due to the fact that we are now considering only self-energy. We do not consider interaction. We do know something about the interaction, but not in terms of equations. So then, of course, I don't know, these are strings, and we should identify them as a theoretical object, you know, like for monopoles, you are shown data, you identify that it's fine-tuned particle, then you identify measure total density and identifies particles living on the surface, and now you must identify what this object is, and you either find it natural or either rather absolutely obvious or absolutely wrong. We seemingly see dual string means object which has very good chances to become fundamental object of a dual description. Why it is so, I don't know, it's obvious. But if I should give arguments, then I'm not aware of any other symmetry which could command self-tuning. You know, this self-tuning is absolute miracle in terms of direct description, and only if I had a theorem of existence of dual description, then self-tuning would be just a consequence of this theorem. We do not have this theorem, but we have self-tuning, and therefore I would like to read it backwards and say that there is existence. Now, then also confinement is simple in terms of string, as anyhow phenomenologically gives this straight line for potential at large distances. It lives on the dual surface lattice. For lattice, it's some extra meaning to this word dual. And then, if I have still, then it's also, let me emphasize that this string, these constraints from asymptotic freedom go further. For example, this is the only example which can be checked. Contribution to the Paquet action from the string is lambda c squared times lambda r squared. This is area and this is action, divergent action. Therefore, if we put it in the context of the whole quantity, then the full quantity is ultraviolet divergent, is 1 over 8 to the 4th, then there is perturbation theory, and then there is this power-like correction from the strings. I don't have time, but apparently strings in standard phenomenology of short distance are always manifested in quadratic correction to asymptotic freedom, to Parton model. And then there is a kind of theorem which I already formulated, but in that case it has a long story, that this correction is not allowed to be added to theory. It must be calculated perturbatively. What is allowed to be added in where perturbation theory diverges is lambda a times lambda c to the fourth power correction. And this quadratic correction cannot be added. Therefore, we see it this contribution from this string, but however, in terms of original formulation, it must be calculable perturbatively. And as I mentioned, there is a beautiful calculations of this g squared on the lattice, and now the accuracy is 10 to minus 3 of agreement of perturbation theory with this is measurable Plaquette action known absolute value, so it's the easiest measurement on the lattice, it's known to absolute accuracy, and then there is a theoretical perturbative expansion which has now accuracy 10 to minus 3 approaching this total value. And this quadratic correction is already inside of this perturbation theory, and moreover you can see how with adding each time each perturbative piece you first have phenomenological fit quadratic correction, but with number of perturbative terms increasing, this correction is eaten up by this perturbation theory. So at least in this case we did see that this is dual in a way. It might be, I don't know whether I was clear. Instantons, they are say non-perturbative fields of our direct formulation, and they can be added to perturbation theory. These the strings are from dual side, they cannot be added, they either for they or we, so to say, it's not in local quantity. Non-local, of course, it is structure, non-local structure. Then let me mention that life may be even more interesting. There are some indications that 3D defects exist, but and somehow related to spontaneous breaking of chiral symmetry. I don't have time now to they cannot have this huge reaction, and therefore for me they're a bit less fundamental, but it's very recent, and maybe it's just an indication that maybe this explicit dependence of on A, let a spacing will show up in many different places. That's all, I mean, conclusions. I believe that there is strong evidence that the dual spring has been observed. It satisfies highly non-trivial asymptotic freedom constraints. This is the only theoretical side from which I can attack it, I mean, from the asymptotic freedom side. It satisfies non-trivial constraints. This G squared is highly non-trivial constraint. Then I believe that it might suggest the existence of dual description, and maybe for this audience it's most important, or the contrary, rejected, can be rejected. It's for SU2, not large NC. And probably there are some other defects coming, but I didn't have time to cover it. Thank you.
Well, thanks for a very nice talk. I guess you often refer to the measurements on the lattice, but you didn't say which groups produced the lattice
data?
No,
it was at first page. Okay. It was a group of Polikarpov from ITEP Moscow. It was on the very first transparency.
It's that group.
And of course, references, just if you wish, if you just click my name, some review talk or whatever. I didn't. It's so much review part also that I couldn't give reference.
Okay. Julie?
I'm just checking my basic understanding. So in modern language, if we make the first step understanding confinement, we want to show probably two things. One, that we have a confining force, a linear potential, and two, that this object has a massless excitation spectrum if we call it a string. So in your setting, can the monopoles say something about the roughening transition? In other words, you know, in a gauge theory, we have confinement and strong coupling one way or the other. Now, what we would like to show is that we suffer a roughening transition into a massless phase, which eventually will go into the continuum limit.
Well, as I said, I mean, if we would try to put just take from continuum theory lattice string and put it on the lattice, we would see exactly this what we see. It's just with like particle. This log of 7, you should understand, it's not some I don't know nonsense. It is just theory in Euclidean space of free particle. If a free particle has energy, log of 7 self energy, log of 7 divided by A, it's free particle propagating with small mass. It is field theory. It's not, and this is continuum mass. M squared is continuum mass. The same if we would be able to write action for string and put it on the lattice, we would see exactly what we see. Area will be lambda Kcd squared, and this will be physical lambda Kcd squared tension of continuum string.
But how do I know the excitation spectrum?
The excitation spectrum, yes. So I'm coming to this. It's of course very important question, but this is very next question for us. I mentioned that what we can do now is self-energy because it's ultra divergent. So we know now the object in terms of self-energy. I mentioned that we do not know excitations interaction. It would be very important, of course, if we would try to start writing SU2 models with this the string. Then we should work harder. We don't know yet the interaction of this with other fields, which must be there. We know phenomenology somewhat, but have no theory or have no explicit expression for it, yes. But monopoles is important. They are also part of the self-energy. Without monopoles, it's known that string does not exist. And by the way, if you would like, next step should be theoretical. It's not possible to write any reasonable action for this string in four dimensions. You must use this raptor or whatever construction to proceed with. The next step is actually theoretical, must be theoretical. You cannot write reasonably in four dimensions. You must involve these geometrical constructions with extra dimensions and so on.
If the chiral phenomena are related with three-dimensional objects and confinement with two-dimensional objects, how come that the transition temperatures are the same?
Well, you know, The fact this is very trivial. I mean, surfaces do not they do not distinguish between left and right hand. You have only in fields are along the surface, so you cannot formulate chiral invariant on the surface. On the other hand, if you have three-dimensional volume, then you may have formulate, and there is some very natural way to see that three-dimensional volumes can be chiral non-invariant. Then surfaces are just boundaries of this volume. This is a single construction. You know, you have three-dimensional volumes. They are chiral. I mean, it's verified. This three-dimensional is still some fantasy. But so you have three-dimensional volume. It has no ultraviolet action extra, but it has difference between left and right action, either right strong or left stronger fields, gluonic. Related, I believe so, yes, but it's not, it's somewhat, I have some scheme, which, phenomenological scheme, it seems to work, yes, but.
In your final results for the average plaquette, are you predicting that if I were to Borel transform its perturbative expansion, that there'd be an infrared renormalon singularity at a position that you'd normally associate with an operator of dimension 2?
No, I mean, actually it's not my paper. I mean, I use this paper for my purposes, but the most advanced calculation is Horst-Lischer-Holtz-Rakoff. You can find it on the net. This quadratic correction historically is associated with ultraviolet renormalon, which has much more complicated status. If you expand in backcoupling as we do now, ultraviolet renormalon is summable for sure. I mean, it's just no such. It comes from momenta higher than ultraviolet cutoff, so to say. It should be summable. And this infrared renormalon, is to be associated with quartic correction, lambda times a to the fourth power. And so far, this perturbation theory does not yet exhibit this factorial growth associated with renormalon, infrared renormalon. So this quadratic correction is within the reach of perturbation theory before it starts to diverge. It's just numerical results.
About expectations, what will be the role of the fermions? Just to suffer for the monopoles and confine, or they will modify the vacuum?
Well, this I don't know, unfortunately. I mean, this is to people here, I mean, they know geometrical constructions. We have only one hint that SU2 is associated with this string. We can start writing its action, which will involve some extra dimensions for sure. Action reasonable, it's just very easy to see. Then we should give it name D3 or I don't know what. And then we should, it's unfortunately, I really feel that we are brought, we have a hint, but I don't know how much lattice can tell you further, in this respect. If there are some three other defects, then it's different. But what about the strings? I don't know even what to ask the string at this, the computer at this moment. We should have at least action written theoretically, then we can proceed. I don't know. So essentially, I don't know.
Well, I think we should, you have another? Okay. We should move on now. Let's thank Professor Zakharov again. So our next